rum has played a rather unusual role in allowing a geopolitical relationship between Taiwan and Lithuania to quickly blossom. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. We'll dig into that story in a moment, but first to Kazakhstan. Police in the Central Asian country's main city of Almaty say they've killed dozens of demonstrators who tried to storm government buildings overnight. The health ministry says more than 1,000 people have been injured in anti-government protests that have been going on for several days. They were sparked by a surge in the cost of fuel, but have grown over discontent with corruption and the rising cost of living there. Troops from a Russian-held military alliance have now been sent to quell the violence. Charlie Robertson, global chief economist at Renaissance Capital, explains why Kazakhstan is so strategically and economically significant for Russia.
Kazakhstan is one of the biggest uranium, biggest wheat and other grains exporters and producers, and one of the biggest oil and gas producers in the former Soviet Union after Russia. And it's always been a very stable ally of Russia over the last 30 years and key to its kind of political Eurasian economic unions and shares similar economics and is a big deal because it's right between Russia and China.
But these protests that we've seen break out in the last few days, I mean, they've drawn so much international attention and have really brought to light the frustration of the people there with corruption and economic hardship there in Kazakhstan. What does that mean for the country's relationship now with Russia, do you think?
I think there have been economic triggers to this. Some numbers we've done show that the minimum wage in Kazakhstan is $97 a month. That was the case actually until just 2 weeks ago. In a country where per capita GDP is $10,000. So that's a minimum wage less than Kenya, less than Pakistan. People have been hard up, while there are certainly families in Kazakhstan that are immensely wealthy. So the inequality issue you're talking about is you know, a factor. What we've seen in the last week or so is Tokayev, the president for the last couple of years, turned to Russia and other countries in the region for support. And that support has been extremely quick. And I suspect will keep the relationship very, very close for the foreseeable future.
I guess the question then from there is when Russia sort of waded into Belarusian affairs in 2020 to sort of crack down on protests against that country's leader, Alexander Lukashenko. That resulted in sanctions from Western nations against Russia. Do you think that sort of response from Western countries could be in the cards for Russia's involvement now in Kazakhstan?
The story with Belarus was that there had been an election. The most polite way you could say it from a Belarusian point of view is that it was highly contested. And where the West felt that the elections were very clearly against Lukashenko and he repressed his population. And then on top of that, forced that landing of the Ryanair plane with a Belarusian opposition activist on it that happened to be overflying Belarus. And that then led to a whole heap of sanctions. This is a very different situation. There's not the same issue of a contested election. So I think it's going to be much harder for the West to consider sanctions on Russia. And if they do so, why not also Tajikistan, Armenia, Kyrgyzstan, and any other countries that might send troops to Kazakhstan, as Tokayev, the president there, has asked for?
So if we just sort of look at what happens next, I mean, the situation is obviously still unfolding, but do you think that with Russian assistance, Kazakhstan can get the situation under control, or do you think that the protests really have momentum and will sort of go on for a while?
No, I mean, we've been doing political analysis using data. Countries are in Kazakhstan's income levels, particularly energy exporters, they do not see regime change. It doesn't happen. So you're not going to see long-lived protests. No, it won't happen.
Charlie Robertson from Renaissance Capital. Thanks so much for weighing in this morning.
No problem.
Checking the numbers now, as unrest in Kazakhstan continues, Russia's currency, the ruble, has hit a 9-month low today against the U.S. dollar. It's been under pressure for the last few months, though, as international concern persists about the nation's military buildup near the Ukrainian border. Elsewhere, stocks across Europe and Asia have followed Wall Street solidly lower today. That's after the Federal Reserve's latest meeting minutes yesterday indicated it'll raise interest rates more quickly than anticipated. Expectations this side of the world, then, are growing for similar similar action from the European Central Bank, and that is also pressuring bond yields across the eurozone. French regulators are cracking down on electronic cookies that track users online. They've unleashed $237 million worth of fines on Facebook and Google over obstacles to letting users opt out of the tracking. The BBC's Hugh Schofield has more on that from Paris.
The French data regulator, known by its acronym the CNIL, found that both Google and Facebook were failing to make it a simpler task to reject the cookie option as to accept it. Their websites offered a single click to accept cookies, but if users wanted to turn them down, there was a more cumbersome process to be gone through. This was in breach, the CNIL said, of the European directive, which says users must have a straightforward choice if they're to offer their free consent. Google said in reaction that it was committed to introducing changes, and Meta said it was reviewing its practices and would continue to cooperate with the French regulator.
That's the BBC's Hugh Schofield reporting from Paris there. Now, it's important to note, if the companies don't follow the new rules, they'll be subject to further fines of more than $100,000 per day. Now to a growing relationship that has annoyed China. It all reportedly started with a shipment of Lithuanian rum. More than 20,000 bottles were bound for China, but after learning it would be refused by authorities there over a row with Lithuania, the South China Morning Post reports Taiwan's government bought it up instead. Today, Taiwan announced it's setting up a $200 million investment fund to further bolster ties with the Baltic nation, as the BBC's Saranjana Tiwari explains.
It's not often a European country gets in between Asian rivals, but China and Taiwan's relationship is anything but ordinary, especially when China claims Taiwan as part of its own country. Now, with this investment, Taiwan says it wants to buy into Lithuanian business. It wants to accelerate approval for things like dairy and grain. And it also wants to build on bilateral trade. And Lithuania does produce a lot of components that are used in products made by lots of European companies, things like car components, IT components. You know, and a lot of those countries are reporting that China is saying, don't buy these Lithuanian products. And that kind of pressure has encouraged Taiwan to step in and protect Lithuania.
That's the BBC's Saranjana Tiwari reporting from Singapore there. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.